Hey, everybody, it's Ryan Ripley. Wanted to get a new offering in front of you as soon as possible, evidence-based leadership. And so, as you all know, Todd Miller, myself, and Will Seeley, we're big on evidence-based management. We want to apply it to the leadership space. We all know that modern managers face complex challenges every day. You're juggling a lot of needs, your direct reports, your stakeholders, your customers, they all need constant attention. What we want to do is help you manage that. We want you to use information and data to make good decisions around all of these areas so that we're delivering the right thing at the right time for the right customer. And we know that we're doing that because we're using data and evidence to validate all the things that we're doing. And not only that, we're not just looking at value, but we're looking at our capabilities as an organization. Can we deliver on time? Can we innovate effectively? Do we have too much tech debt? Do we have too many things in process? Are we unable to deliver when the market demands that we do? We look at all of these things with evidence-based management. We merge that into a leadership mindset and lens, and we enable you to make new and better decisions repeatedly based off of the data that you're collecting within your organization. It's exciting stuff. We hope you can join us. Visit agileforhumans.com/EBL course. Join us in one of these offerings. We think you're going to love it. Hope you can join us. Use Agile for Humans, the number 4, to take another 15% off of this course. And we can't wait to see you there.
Will, we are here to continue our series on evidence-based management. We've discussed evidence. We've discussed goals. Now we're going to discuss the empiricism side of this, starting with the subject of changing measures.
Yeah. Yeah. The management side of things. And this is really where EBM stops being just a goals and measures framework, right? This is, like you said, this is where the empiricism comes in. This is where the management comes in. This is why I think it fills in, kind of a vacant governance niche in the agile space.
Yeah, it's interesting because you can have a one-time thing where you go and you have really good-looking goals that you set up. You spend maybe a day or two working through this. You have all your KVAs. You have KVM set up underneath it. And then you just keep doing the same thing, right? That's why the interwovenness of empiricism, when we talk about evidence-based management, is vitally important to it being beneficial for anything, right? So why don't we get into sharing the screen here and start putting some notes down as we've done in the past. I'm going to make that happen right now. And see, look at our board, Will. We're filling it all in. Hop over here towards empiricism and start talking about changing measures. How do you want to kick this one off?
So why would we want to change measures, Todd?
Yeah, I can think of a bunch of reasons. Right. Some of the reasons I think is, number one, if they're not relevant anymore, right? Perhaps we're changing measurements because we're changing goals.
Yeah, that's true.
I also can't help but think about when we try to force in performance measurements, maybe unintentionally or intentionally. And when you try to put a performance measurement on a knowledge worker, that knowledge worker will find out about that performance measurement, and then it will lose the information that you wanted it to give you anyway. And so sometimes I see that happen with a measurement unintentionally. And it's like, wow, this looks really good. And then you figure out it's because people want it to look good. Yeah. So those are the first flash of the pan things off the top of my head. What about you? Why would we want to change it?
Yeah, I think you're touching on one of them is, you know, like it or not, any measure you're going to introduce is going to influence behavior. Mm-hmm. And the moment you notice that behavioral change is not what's going to help you get closer to your goals, you need to start measuring something else. That measure is useless at that point.
Yeah.
And the other part is just relevance.
Yeah.
Right. It may be that you think you have a measure of something that is really relevant to you. But looking at it, even if it changes, it may not impact the things that you want to see change elsewhere. So let's give an example. For instance, let's say we're looking at flow metrics, right? We're looking at throughput. And we have this idea that, hey, you know, if throughput remains stable and we continuously deliver value to our customers, that our that metrics and our current value are also going to increase. But what if they don't, right? What if it isn't the amount of stuff that we're delivering that's going to really raise the current value of what it is we're offering, right? In that case, it might be more worthwhile to look at things in ability to innovate, for example. It could be the quality of what you're delivering. It could be that you're largely doing maintenance and you're very well at delivering a lot of maintenance things, but that's not what your customer is looking for.
Yeah. I don't know why, Will, this is making me think of and abstracting this to something in like our personal lives, right? So if we were thinking about changing measurements, I work with a lot of people in the fitness industry, right? And so when it comes to changing measurements, you talk about somebody that is stuck on trying to lose weight, right? And so let's say that that's a measurement that they're measuring. They're measuring their weight and trying to lose it. What if that person then begins a very regimented weightlifting program, right? Suddenly, weight loss is not as important, but what if you keep measuring it as an indicator of success? You've become more muscular, and muscle weighs more than fat, but you're still intent on losing weight. At what point are you detracting from your goals of getting stronger rather than just losing weight? It's this counterbalance. I hope that one's kind of sticks. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. According to the BMI index, right, the body mass index, a lot of professional weightlifters and strongmen are horrendously overweight.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah. And so think of that. Think about how we're doing that in our organizations, this obsession with this one metric that we may have that might be completely irrelevant because of something else we're trying to do. So why do we continue to measure them? It's almost like that, you know, they say the definition of insanity, right? We just are intent on continuing to measure it, continuing to look at it, and continuing to drive behaviors behind it, but it isn't relevant to what we're doing right now.
Well, and here's the wicked thing when you actually try to change measures, right? We know that phrase, if you don't measure what you value, you will value what you measure. But once this is taken root in an organization, once you have those initial measurements in place, there's a large degree of sunk cost fallacy involved. Mm-hmm. We have a really hard time letting go. And you and I face this especially when we try to move organizations from a management of people mindset to a management of work, mm-hmm. right? We don't care about the individual efficiency numbers of employees, right? We don't care if someone is 10% utilized, 50% utilized, 90% utilized, right? Beyond that, that 90% is too much. But if that's all an organization measures, trying to get them to measure something else and letting go of those individual performance metrics is really, really hard because they put a lot of effort into designing a whole management system around it.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, those measurements are easy to define and easy to find because we've been using them for quite some time. The problem with them is this one here, behavioral influence, right? Yeah. And what happens there. And the fact that the digital economy that we're working in right now has a lot of knowledge workers. Knowledge workers are creative workers. Yeah. And it's really hard, if not impossible, I would argue impossible, to measure the performance of one of those knowledge workers. By way of the success of a product, you can. Let's turn the focus and attention to a product. And so I'm wondering, Will, is there any flags that go up when you know that a measurement that we have in place right now is no longer relevant? Any kind of smell that you tend to pick up on?
Well, when the results stay out. Right. So ultimately, I think as an organization, and we'll be using EBM terminology here, is you're trying to capitalize on unrealized value and you're trying to raise the current value of what you're doing. Now, the metrics in those two areas tend to be lagging metrics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas the metrics that you see in ability to innovate and time to market tend to be leading metrics. Now, and we've gotten into fights with people about this because in a complex environment, you can't really establish a good causal link between a leading metric and a lagging metric. But our assumption is by tweaking some of the numbers in ability to innovate and time to market, even if we can't establish a direct causal link to lagging metrics and current value and unrealized value, raising one should in time raise the other, right? So if we have a metric in there that even when we target it with immediate tactical goals or potentially even an intermediate goal, and we see real gains, but we see no change whatsoever in current value or unrealized value, you know, that may not be a metric that matters, actually.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes across the board here. You know, you mentioned a couple of things about goals changing. It's probably interesting to understand behavioral influences here as well, and relevance. I think you've kind of hit on all of these, and how we look at these, and that causality thing. I tell you what, Will, as a product owner, drove me insane, because yeah. I wanted to know the answer. I wanted to know a direct correlation between a feature that we built and the success of it in production. And I couldn't find it in a lot of instances. It drove me insane until I just let it go. And we talk a lot about taking these small bets and trying to measure things. And when I was thinking about this, and when you were mentioning things, you were talking about the KVAs a bit, and I started to think, and I truly believe this, and I'm not sure what your experiences are, but I truly believe that in any given circumstance, in any moment in time, there is a little bit of tilt into one of the KVAs.
Yeah.
In product development. Now, it's really hard to evenly distribute our thoughts and what we're focused on across all four KVAs. And so I do feel like companies will lean into one of the KVAs at any given time, sometimes too much. Okay. And so I'm wondering if a really good sense-making tool is to, you know, at some kind of interval, take a quick peek and say, where are we focused right now? Because if that focus changes on your KVAs, if you were focused on time to market, right? If you were focused on time to market and suddenly you find yourself more focused on achieving some unrealized value, right? Your measurements are probably stale. It's probably time to look at new things. So I don't know. What do you think about? Do you see the same thing in the field where you see organizations tend to be tilted in one of the areas?
Well, absolutely. I think one of my fairly recent examples, and this was I think about a year ago. I was working with a company. I came in to kind of offer a second opinion, and they had a good dashboard. Right, they tracked quite a few metrics. They had stuff in all of the KVAs. The problem was, when you look at it through the lens of the product lifecycle, they had quite a few metrics related to unrealized value that they were tracking for a set of products that had been declared end of life and were decommissioned in the next 2 years. So my question is, well, what's going on here? Why do you even care? Mm-hmm. Right, this is all about creating a graceful exit.
Yeah, interesting. Right, and we're spending time and money measuring those things.
Yeah, and we've seen it happen a few years ago in America with Wells Fargo, right? Mm-hmm. Where the goal was get more people to open more accounts. Right. Well, that's great if you're the underdog and you're trying to capture market share. But if you already have 60% of the market, trying to get more and more and more accounts and continuing a strategy focused around growth year on year, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example. So let's suppose that you start out with 10% market share, you're Wells Fargo, and you move to 60% market share, but you're ignoring the fact that 60% market share is falling off in the back end because your customers aren't happy. That might be a signal that we should start to focus a little bit more on current value. And maybe by way of current value, you find out that the time to market and ability to innovate is holding you back from delivering upon current value, right? That's what I love about all this stuff, right? It's very sense-making. It's very sense-making. There's a lot of stuff that we can figure out just through looking at these and having conversations about it. So I think this metrics and how we change metrics and what we do here is of vital importance to our success. And don't just keep measuring the same stuff, right?
Absolutely. So let's do what we always do and share some of the examples of how changing measures has actually helped us in running our companies.
Yeah, sounds good. Why don't you start, Will?
Sure. So when I started ProZilience, probably about 2.5 years ago now, right? One of the things that I needed to do was figure out, okay, is this going to be a business that can keep me alive? Basically, can it pay the bills? So, what I was looking at was what percentage of billable time, right, do I have in the future? So not so much looking at utilization per se, but do I have enough work coming in to continue to pay for the bills, right? And this was a really good thing to look at, right? So I looked at looking at kind of my hourly rate, like how many hours ahead in the future in terms of training and things did I need to have booked to make sure that I could at least break even. And this was a good thing at first because it allowed me to focus time on, well, do I approach new clients? Do I say yes to certain things? And I used this metric for about 6 months. And then I noticed that it started becoming counterproductive. Because what started happening was it was so directing me towards certainty of income that I lost time to innovate. And I also forgot to book in holiday time.
Interesting. And so you were driving to try to make that a better, when by way of that, you were kind of potentially even burning yourself out, right? The behavioral component of that. No holiday time, kind of burning yourself out. What'd you change into? Do you still measure it? Is it just kind of like a back burner thing?
So no, I stopped using that measure, mainly because I got into a good rhythm, but also because I noticed that it didn't fulfill its intended purpose of creating a sustainable business. And what I moved into was one of the measures we talked about earlier, where I look at what percentage of my time do I actually have available for innovative work, like doing these things. So basically tracking to make sure that my utilization doesn't go beyond a certain point.
It's interesting because I was thinking of something very similar for Agile for Humans, because Agile for Humans is about 2 years old as well. And when Ryan and I decided to combine, one of the things we were trying to figure out is classes booked. How many classes do we have booked so that we're in a sustainable business model, something like that. And quickly that became irrelevant, especially this year when I created a metric under ability to innovate that was looking at how many days were blocked off on our calendar, how busy are we, right? And when we looked at that, we're actually just now having conversations on how to reduce that. Because it's like, it's way too much, you know, like we find ourselves waking up very early in the morning to do these kinds of things or staying up very late and we're tired and the quality isn't there. So I was going to take it into our focus on increasing YouTube subs, which we had gone for very hard. But your story made me think of how, you know, we were going from the importance of the number of classes that we have booked, although we could have put consulting in there. We were looking more at classes booked. And now it's more like calendar days. And I'm looking at that as an ability to innovate. Like, how many calendar days do we have blocked out? I have a little script that goes out and reads our shared Google calendar and shows us what that is. And the spike is just like, we need more time to do these kinds of things, as you were mentioning.
And I think the interesting thing is we both found through experience that we started to measure our innovation rate. Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. that's what this for the both of us comes down to. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. We looked at these other things first, calendar days booked, biddable time booked ahead in the future. And through experience we learned that, hey, actually no, it's innovation rate that's actually important. Like once basic hygiene is established, it's important to guard your ability to evolve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting you say that too, because when I think of innovation rate, I think of the expansion aspect of innovation rate. And I start to think about all the things that we'd really like to automate, but haven't had time to. Right. So it's like we're just manually doing these things that take hours and hours and hours. And so I think by way of reducing the calendar days booked, that we could increase our ability to expand by automating some of the things that we do manually right now. So, yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, that's I think it on changing measures.
Yeah. Hopefully people got some stuff out of it.
Yeah, I think we touched on a few things. I think the main thing that we want to make sure that you take away from this video is don't just wait for your goals to change. These three things that we measured, the goals change, the behavioral influence, the relevance, all those things on their own are reason enough to reevaluate what things you measure.
100%, 100%, 100%. And we gave a couple ideas on how you can maybe gain some insights if you have some stale measurements out there. So, cool. All right. Well, I think this one's a wrap.
Exactly. Until next time.
Hey, it's Ryan. If you're enjoying this show and want to take a deeper dive into Scrum with me and Todd, check out agileforhumans.com/training. Be sure to also look at the show notes to subscribe to our newsletter, get a copy of our book, Fixing Your Scrum, and learn more about working with us at Agile for Humans. Thanks for listening, and Scrum on!